idea about this city.
Fine.
But I just... Yeah. I'd like to welcome all of you to this sitting of our portfolio committee. We have two items before us, and before that, I've got three apologies. That's from Honorable September, Honorable Holodo, and Honorable Sonto. They all starting at the other committee meeting, but they will join us.
Mr. Nana is attending the Defense Committee and Mr. Bobo also is attending that committee.
Okay. I think we should start. And the first item on our agenda would be, and that's item number three. And that's a briefing by the researcher on expenditure trend analysis, the AG's report. And this has got to do with a budget review and recommendation report, which we as a committee would have to put together and submit. Do we all have copies of this? The draft. No. I think that will make it a bit difficult for us to, but I'd like to apologize that you've actually received this draft only now. But if it's in order with all members, I would appeal that we start working through it and see how far we can go. I will request the researcher then to take us through the report if there are no comments before that. Honorable Van Dijk, Dr. Van Dijk.
Chairperson, yes, I must say, you know, and you yourself will agree with me as well, coming a long time now in politics, we can understand sometimes delays. When there's a delay when to receive the reports, at the end of the day, we will have to go through the report. We will have to discuss and debate the report. But what makes it very difficult, and I want to put this on the record, is to discuss it on the very same moment, the very same afternoon as we receive the report. And I'm not pointing fingers to any person. It's a lot of work went into this document, and we appreciate the excellent work that's gone into it. But on the other side, it must also be understood that we as members of Parliament must have the opportunity to go through it thoroughly, let our minds flow, and then come back to a meeting and say, this is what we understand it is. Because sometimes things will jump your mind in the process now, because you will read here, the discussion will be there, and people's views will be there, and you can't concentrate thoroughly. So I just want to put it on record that we must make sure that in future also that we receive the reports in advance so that we come to the committee meetings very well prepared. Thank you, Chair.
I think Honorable Van Dijk speaks on behalf of all of us. I think this is a very important report that we have to consider. It would have helped, but I think it is only proper practice that, you know, this be received well beforehand so that members can, you know, not rush through it. Thank you so much, Dr. Van Dijk. Can we... You want to come? Can we, with those, like I said, I think Dr. Van Dijk speaks on behalf of all of us. I wouldn't like us to debate the matter further. Can we then, I think the Secretary would like to say something before, before we allow the researcher to take us. Yeah, I think what the Secretary will do is just to remind members about the whole process, you know, that we will have to go through in finally adopting this this report.
Okay, thank you, Supervisor. Members will understand that even the notice, as it says for the meeting, it doesn't say the report itself, but it says the researcher will prefer on the analysis of these documents. So, yeah, yes. But now what we have done, we have tried to be proactive but put it in the template of the report. But we don't expect members to have read the analysis probably before this, but he will be taking us through the analysis of that in preparation for the report, but the report is, we have put it in the report template, so we apologize for that. Secondly, just to explain again to members that the analysis that has been made, it's taking into consideration the annual report that we have been briefed upon last week by the department. The one, and also the oversight visit that we have taken as a committee. The researcher has also looked at the Section 32, which has quarterly reports on how the department spends its money, whether they are spending, or they are overspending, or they are underspending, or whether there's money that we think that it's used for the purpose that it's not meant for. Secondly, the report takes into consideration whether the committee should check whether the trend analysis, whether the department is spending money with regards to if it may be within the first 3 months. Is it spending 5% of the money, or is underspending, or is overspending, so that we are able to look at that, even issues of misappropriation of funds and things like this. And then the committee would then, after looking at all the annual reports, because of time constraints, we are unable to look at all the annual reports, but we look at FCOM and Transport because they are big. Then we're supposed to report to Parliament as to what is it that we request the department to do to improve on its finances, or whether we feel that the department is not delivering on its outcomes, because the department has got outcomes that it put in the strategic plan that we are going to achieve 1, 2, and 3. So according to those programs, the researcher will be saying whether the department is according to the annual report delivering on those outcomes and measurable objectives that they put in the annual report. So this is basically what this process will be. Then the committee would deliberate, then we will check the deliberations of the committee and observations and also recommendations and include them into the report. The report will only be adopted not today, but only tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I understand that procedure. I just want to ask a question, though. I don't think I've seen a Section 32 report, a quarterly report. Am I missing something? So it would seem that we are totally reliant then just on, you know, what is in front of us and nothing that we've been working through ourselves.
Any further comments? Honorable Gloria, you are correct. We haven't been provided with this quarterly report. Not yet. So what the researcher has been doing is to interact with the department on some of the information that is required to put together this report. And I think the annual report which we received last week. Also one of the guiding documents. Honorable Mukwege.
Yeah, Chairperson, I think all comments have really been fair, made in good faith, and I think we should proceed based on what the committee secretary has said and what you have also said. And then we'll assess the situation at the end of the presentation by the researcher. I shouldn't imagine there are many controversies, you know. Let's proceed and see how it goes, and then, of course, at the end of the meeting, presentation that will assess what our stance should be. Now it is only a draft. If I may proceed with the presentation, I'm not going to talk about the introduction, the mandate, and the, what the department does or its oversight responsibilities, but I will start from page 4 on the strategic priorities and measurable objectives of the department. And then I will proceed from there. If the members feel that there is no need for me to emphasize any other section or to put more emphasis on this particular section, I'll welcome that so that I do not keep the members on the issues that they might be familiar with. Looking at the strategic plan of the department, members will note also that the department's oversight responsibilities over SOP is it's mainly oversight. So their strategic plan obviously revolves around oversight. So in the strategic plan of the department for 2011 to 2014, these are some of the strategic objectives that they have listed. That is the improving of delivery and maintenance of infrastructure and monitoring of the rollout of the Transnet and Eskom Build program. These strategic objectives obviously they speak to the new growth path and also to the IPAP industrial policy action plan. The second one is achieving policy and regulatory clarity in sectors which the state-owned companies operate. We know that Transnet has been complaining about NERSA, the tariff increase that they granted them. When they needed more, they got less, and the issue was that it hampers their infrastructure program, especially the funding part of it. And then the department also intend to develop operational indicators for each of the SOEs. We know they've been referring to this. They talk about the dashboard where they are able to identify what is happening in each of the SOEs. This is part of their strategic objectives for the next 5 years. If members feel that there is any issue that they want to raise, I don't know if they will raise while I'm presenting or they will wait.
I think let's go through it. If members feel that there's something that they would like to raise, a point for clarity or whatever input they would like to make, let's do this so that we don't have you go through the whole report and then because you may not take note of everything that you would like to speak on. Honorable Fandana.
Yes, just on this point 2.1, the department strategic plan. I missed the last two meetings when but I was here when Transnet was here where they talked about their boat program, and I've also read in the media a lot about the Ports Authority where the tariffs are very high and it's not acceptable. There are different sectors like the oil rigging companies are complaining that Transnet is not giving enough attention, the Ports Authority, to get them to come in with their rigs and get a lot of money into the economy which would also create a lot of jobs. I think we should focus on that as well. And then there was the other issue, the transit, freight and rail, where we have a shortage of a lot of apprentices and or the rail engineering, and where there are also educating all these apprentices in the at Kruispoort and in South River. So we should also monitor that and make sure that that program gets built up. Make it a strategic point that they must monitor that, because the country really needs the apprentices. I just thought, I don't know if I'm out of order to...
Honorable Mukwena?
Yes, although we know the PRC is going to transfer the come with the recommendation to the president, I think we should capture the concern that we have expressed in the committee that this double oversight role that has been played by the TPE and ourselves as this committee, that's really worries, because they tend to be not to be hands on on the work, because the mandate says that they're supposed to do oversight, and then we're also supposed to oversight. So this double thing, that's really what I think that should be captured. The view that should be a mandate, because it's not aggressive corrective management. Yes.
Yes, I also just want to add that in the IPEP they talk about the gasification and everything else. It also forms part of I think the Transnet Ports Authority, which they would have to allow the people to bring in the gas so that we can use it in the country. So we also need to make that a focus point and keep a track of it. And I think we should include it here, if it's all right.
Okay. Eric? Honorable comment?
Chairperson, I'm not too sure either if this is would fit in here, but I think we also had a lot of emphasis on the developmental state. And I don't know that I see that coming out here. And just in relation to what Honorable Mukwena has said, because I think we're trying to differentiate between, you know, the sort of hands-on shareholder in this whole thing with the developmental state, as opposed to perhaps the sectoral and the policy making. I don't know how you put it, but I think that needs to be
emphasized.
Larry? I've noted the suggestion. I think some will go to the section, to the relevant section, while the others might go to the recommendation section. I'm on page 5, the department measurable objectives as outlined through its programs. The way the department works, operates through its programs. It's got 6 programs, which is administration, energy and broadband, and then there's legal governance and transaction, as well as manufacturing, transport enterprises, and the joint project facility. So I thought it best to list each program so that the committee understand exactly what each program does to meet the objectives of the department with regard to its oversight over SOEs. The measurable objectives for the department and the administration is to provide strategic direction and leadership support service to enable the department to deliver on its organizational objectives, to improve the quality of corporate governance and performance monitoring systems. I don't know if I have to go with each program to list what are the measurable objectives, or as to go to the objectives, whether they are achieved or not in the next section.
Can we have some guidance there from members? Honorable Dr. Corino?
Chairperson, I suggest, if I understand the template correctly, this previous section that we've dealt with, the strategic plans of the department, and this measurable objectives, is only a summary of the strategic plan of the department and the operational plans. After this, we come about to talk to the analysis of the analysis, not on the factual summary. So this first, up to...
so we must go to point three.
The end of page six is just a summary of strategic plans, operational plans. So I think we must take it as read, and if we have inputs to make tomorrow before it's finalized, that's fine. But the sooner we get to the analysis, the better.
Are we agreed to that? Okay. Are you on point three now?
On point three, this section begins by outlining what are the government's objectives, especially key focus areas for the for all the departments, and in particular for the Department of Public Enterprises. Soon after the State of the Nation address and the publication of the new code, SOEs in particular and the department especially, they in response gave their own strategic objectives, and they speak to the new growth path objectives of employment creation, infrastructure investment, and skills development. But even in that context, they implemented these objectives through their programs. If we look at administration, the administration program is comprised of the ministry, the Office of the Director General, as well as the Chief Investment and Portfolio Manager. In line with its target, the department has developed theological planning, monitoring and evaluation framework guidelines, and the standardization of financial and risk reporting templates and dashboard, which enhance analytical functionality. So this program actually almost is an overarching program that looks at all the various SOEs, mainly administrative work, whereas energy and broadband focuses on does oversight on SOEs like ESCOM, Infraco. If we look at their operational plan, the department speaks of developing and securing financing support for ESCOM. We know that ESCOM last year, they did mention that they have a weak balance sheet. They needed $20 billion just to strengthen their balance sheet. But also they had a funding shortfall of, last year they said it's $190 billion. But this year, when they came to report to the Parliament, to the committee, they said it's $300 billion. But 71% of that amount has already been secured with the help of the department and government. And then looking at legal governance. Legal governance mainly looks at ALESCO. It's not only ALESCO in particular, but because ALESCO, there is an out-of-court settlement, and the department is...
Sorry, Chairperson, before we jump to ALESCO, with your permission, I just wonder, the $800 billion infrastructure fund that the government is made available for the next year or so, I just wonder to what extent would Transnet, for instance, some of the procedures that have got functions that are linked to infrastructure will plug in order not to to require them to go out and look for money when that money is already being allocated by Treasury. I mean, I think of Transnet, for instance, that money, yes. You see, because what we as parliamentarians would obviously want to avoid is that after, let's say, the end, Treasury announced that now this money has been made available, but very few people access it. And it cast a spell on us as MPs that were sitting there. So the point is this, that with this BRRR that we are busy with at the moment now, we have an opportunity to actually plug into, find a relationship between the weak balance sheets of the various parastatals, I mean, state-owned companies, and that money that's available. Because you see, when the Minister of Finance comes up and makes a statement, he'll just say, he will consolidate all the requirements And then, but you have a situation where the SOEs are still, you know, screaming for more money when the money is actually being, when the money is actually there. And next year, when it comes up and addresses Parliament again, they'll say there's been a rollover, etc., etc., and money have not been claimed, requested. So I just want us to be a bit proactive now here, and since it has all the CFOs of the SOEs, to find out if they have not been laid back in not accessing that money that the National Church has been available.
So, Honourable Mkwena, you want us to do is to use this opportunity to raise that there is this money that has been set aside, and why can't departments access that money instead of them or the entities going to look for money somewhere else, borrow money?
That is saying that, let's go and say that with the weak balance sheet, they need 20 billion. Mm-hmm. Now, that 20 billion could be drawn from this money that currently has been voted by Parliament for infrastructure development.
Honorable comment?
I think Honorable Mkwena is making a good point, except to say that would that not come through the departments of energy and water and, you know, those departments that actually handle all of that, because that's a sort of infrastructure, and perhaps I'm speaking with my other hat now, where human settlements and that includes this huge big community building growing sort of thing, in which all these departments now, including COCTA, will all be coming to the party to produce that. But I'm not terribly sure that I would understand where we would make, you know, cash in on that. I hear what you're saying, but I'm not terribly clear in my own mind how we would tap into that when I think we are tapping into it actually, but perhaps not from this committee. I think that's what I'm trying to say.
The point is this, that ESCOM would not, ESCOM will not be able to use infrastructural money for energy generation. But they did indicate in the report that they need money for roads, etc., to the mines, to the rail space, etc. I'm talking relevantly to infrastructural development, not for energy generation. And of course, Transnet, when you come to deal with Transnet, obviously, Transnet are infrastructure people. The question of ports that the Honorable Fandela is speaking about. So the point that the money is there in the kitty there, and it should be accessed, otherwise, it means that it's going to be rolled over, et cetera, and the SOEs will keep on coming here year after year to say that we need money, our balance sheet is solid, it's weak, whereas we as Parliament have voted for it. The 800 billion is a lot of money. Now, and we know, because of problem of capacity, some of the government departments will not qualify to access that money. Now, those that do qualify, like the ESCOMs and the Transnet, should actually not be remiss in accessing that money, because they've got expertise and they've got very cogent programs that are screaming out for funding.
Perhaps I didn't make myself clear. The 20 billion that ESCOM asked for, it was for the previous financial year. Actually, they were granted it. It was mainly to strengthen their balance sheet, and it enabled them to go out and borrow from the market, which they did, and now they see they subtracted 1% of their funding shortfall. And if we're looking at the trend expenditure analysis of the department, it's coming down, which means that there will be no further funding for us. On point 3.3, still on page 8, local governance and transactions.
Sorry, I don't want to interfere, but what Aubrey is talking about, if I get him right, is like a transversal management system where you have, where Transnet is going to build railroad and Eskom needs the coal at the power station, and they must work together to do it and not work separately. And I think that's what he was talking about, to work smarter with the money that they have and not work double work. So I think that's what he was told. We must build that into this program as well. I don't know if I think of a transversal management system where I would think the department would be doing that. They would know that Transnet wants to build a regular and they could use Eskom or use it better and not have it lie idle. I hope that makes sense. It's just very difficult.
Yeah, I think there is some agreement between the two. What you're saying, Honourable Van Dalen, that's how they would be working now.
Mm.
Yeah. That is. I think it was raised in the meeting last week during the annual report. Yeah. The presentation of that. Eric?
Thank you, John. On legal governance and transaction, here the department was supposed to ensure the implementation of the out of court settlement between the department, our government, and the retirement community. So most of the money that they make transfers to fulfill that obligation, since it's an out of court settlement. So under legal governance and transaction, that's the main activity actually that has captured the attention of the department. Right now, the upgrade of the township, which after they have upgraded to municipal standards, then they will be able to transfer it to the municipality to run it, because in the past it has been run by Alaska. In fact, everything in the transfer has been run by Alaska. After it has been fully upgraded, then it will be transferred to the municipality. In their report, annual report, when they came to Parliament, they indicated that will be finished by the end of June, which is June this year. So I don't know if the DPE representative who's here can confirm whether that has been done or not. On manufacturing enterprises,
I listened to the radio with great delight yesterday. The SAFM economic review session, 6 o'clock until over 6. And they said something about that Alex was now going to go into Africa, TRC, etc., Uganda, Ghana, where, for Middle East. But the point is this, that the person speaking there mentioned the fact that they are now over the hurdle concerning the hurdles after the conflict they had with the community, because communities divided among themselves, and then Alasco was waiting for those disputes to actually finish, and also the litigation things. He said they've now formed a thing called the joint something. Exactly. Which means now, they've buried the hatchet now, they're not going to fight anymore among themselves as a community, there won't be rivalry, and Alasco is now going to meaningfully partner in working together. So when they go into Africa, they don't go there, Alasco. So it was like a reconciliation, a remarriage, the way I understood it. So I don't know to what extent does the researcher know that, so it could also be captured. So that report must not just be sound too historical and not capture the new promising dynamic.
Thanks a lot, remember, for the input. I'll take note of that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hope you got my apologies. I just wanted to check something on this upgrade. Alexco there is just a project manager, and the money is coming from the department. It's not REPS proceeds that are coming from Alexco developing that community. Do I get you correctly?
Honorable member, because it was an out-of-court settlement, when they went to court, the community, the defendant was the department or government. I don't think it was necessarily Alexco. But I think
ALESCO together with the department, they're working together to make sure that the out of court settlement is fulfilled. I'm not sure.
So it will be the department that hands over. It could either be ALESCO, in fact, on behalf of the department that hands over that particular project to the municipality.
Because it was ALESCO was running everything in Alexander Bay. Mm-hmm. And then the out of court settlement and everything we have to be, because there were no elections, there were no councillors there. Everything was being run by ALESCO, the hospital, the clinics, the filling station, the schools. So when they won, then they were supposed now to run normally like any other community. But if you look at the budget of the department, most of the money they get from treasury is always specified, this is to fulfill the out of court settlement. So which means it comes from treasury. I don't know if ALESCO does contribute to that, but ALESCO, since it's there on the ground, I think somehow they're working with the department, or maybe like you are saying, the project. They are the ones who drive the project.
Chairperson, the point that I wanted to drive home was that sometimes when ALESCO is making presentations, they make it as if it's their contribution to the community. Whereas in the true sense of the operation, it's government's contribution to the community as a result of that out-of-court settlement. Okay.
Alex Ford is government.
I just wanted to add that it's easy to explain if you say that there was nothing. ALESCO started a mine. They had to look after the people that were there, their workers, and now they put up this village there, but the village doesn't conform to municipal standards, which the out-of-court settlement said we would upgrade it to municipal standards, we would hand it over to the municipality so that they could connect to the grid and do everything else, and the roads would conform to the sizes and the street lights would be there, and that's what that other money is for. I was there last week, and it doesn't look like there's too much change there where the 150 million rand went. We should go and investigate. So it still looks like it was like we were there 2 years ago. It looks the same.
Thanks a lot, thank you, Chairperson. Still on page 8, 3.4 manufacturing. Manufacturing mainly focuses here. The main focus was Denmark, because of the arms manufacturing center, but also with the challenges that Denel is facing. I think the committee is aware that Denel is facing financial problems. Last year, the opinion of the auditor was that as a going concern, it's problematic. So the department tried to do a review of Denel's financial sustainability, trying to work with the Department of Defense. Some of the processes are still ongoing. There is no finality on what will happen with Daniel, but then the processes are there, and the department is trying to find a solution for the Daniel sub-final structures. There's also Daniel Dynamics, just to turn the companies into profitability. On
sorry, Chairperson. I'm sorry. I'm fascinated by the remark that was made, Honorable Van Dalen, that he went to ALESCO last year, which is very good. This is now hands on constituent. I just want to find out if he pays out of his pocket there, or or how does he get compensated for that? So that.
I paid out of my own pocket to go there.
No.
It cost the government nothing.
Exactly. But I think, Chairperson, not for this meeting. I think, this is not a civil issue. When MPs, when trying to empower MPs, it should be, I'm just flagging the issue that they should find a mechanism, perhaps in the WIPARI or meeting of the forum of the chairpersons, to empower MPs. That MPs are not just wait for the normal entourage to actually go there now. When MP sees something happen, they look for the chairperson and go there, and there should be compensation so that you don't lose your money. That's not meant to do that.
Please don't compensate me. I'm away. Thank you.
make a proposal that under manufacturing, that you see they in 3.4 they're in the middle, that the guarantees, loan guarantees, 1.85 billion has been secured as the interim support to NEL. That runs out in September 2012 that we added here, because it's a time limit, a time frame, it's 12 months. Secondly, I think the NEL has financial challenges, but there's one business unit there that's in urgent need of a funding requirement, and that is DSA, that we also put separately part of the NEL under this manufacturing enterprises, that the funding requirement for DSA is very critical. And then in manufacturing enterprises, we have the NEL, but there's also SAFCO. And SAFCO is not here. So I propose that we also include SAFCO analysis of the strategic plan of SAFCO in this. And the same for the next 3.5. I see transport enterprises only SAA. There's also SA Express, that we also include them as part of this analysis.
Five transport enterprises, the honorable member have already indicated that the need for South African Express. Yet the department managed to conclude the first transaction and the delivery of the first 380 to 200 was delivered in February early this year. And also the review of South African Airways Technical. That also has been, the review has been done, because earlier on, I think in the past two financial years, there have been concerns that since SAA was borrowing too much money and they had a weak balance sheet, then they need to bring in private equity partners. And I remember there was a suggestion that maybe SAAT might be privatized, but then with the new administration, instead South African Airways Technical will instead expand its operation to serve in the southern region part of Africa. Yes, Honorable Member will include South African Express as well as South Korean Manufacturing Enterprise. The joint project facility in the department, mainly it looks at projects that are strategic to SOEs. That's what they do mainly. And in this instance, they are focusing on the nuclear and renewable energy of the country in response to the
aviation. Sorry, Chairperson, through you. Before that, going back to the aviation, SAA and SAA Express, in the concept of infrastructure, Chairperson, this just worries me. Aviation is superstructure, but it's actually it is infrastructure as well. Because the village, they are not using the ground, they're using the air. Now, going back to this money business, because you're saying that now the balance sheet was bleeding, I just wonder, Chairperson, I don't want to bore the meeting, like this 800 billion that's available, why shouldn't it be accessed then? Why should it be relegated just to roads on the ground and housing, et cetera, et cetera, and not for infrastructure in that conceptual sense? Because, I mean, the aeroplanes are flying in the air, but that is actually, it's not superstructure, it's actually infrastructure. Somebody help me there. It might be part of the competition, because we are here to make sure, well, this BRE, this BRRR, it's got to include recommendations, so that now we don't operate in silos and traditionally. Otherwise, as Honorable Goma has said, then we don't assist, we don't add really to the concept of a developmental stage, because we are very traditionalistic that infrastructure must be land surface, anything on the land surface. But by broad definition, you know, aviation should also be infrastructure, because except that it just it's up there, but I mean, it's actually part of transportation. By aviation instead of as opposed to transportation on the land surface, or even on the sea surface. All that is just all that infrastructure on the sea, on the land, in the air. There, it's all infrastructure. What am I saying? He missed out because he was reaching now. We could also perhaps help the meeting. We are saying the researcher is pointing out when he presents the report that there are certain financial needs, burdens that are there on balance sheet of certain SOEs. The requirement. Now I'm saying the point I'm making is this, that National Treasury has made available $800 billion for infrastructure development. Now that money must not be seen as money in a silo, locked up there only for land, for ground, but also should be also be accessed in terms of other media, other versions of infrastructure. Now I'm suggesting that shouldn't just be ground, which is land surface, but also as a medium, or like in the case of aeroplanes and what we see. Transport, I mean, Transnet, the ports, etc. All that should be part of this thing. Otherwise, if we operate in silos, that money will be locked up there and be underutilized because there won't be takers over a year. And yet, the balance sheets, the needs are there.
Thank you, Chairperson. Our still on joint project facility. But there is nothing much here because this program mainly looks at strategic projects that are of benefit or are strategic to the SOEs and to the work of the department. In this case, we have SAPRO, which focuses on nuclear and renewable energy, and then we have the CES, DP, whose responsibility is to find ways to leverage this procurement to build our management. To expand our manufacturing base.
Yeah, I was just wondering, I mean, SAPRA, I haven't actually heard of SAPRA itself. I mean, I know SARI. Now, does SARI fall under SAPRA, or how does that work? Just if you can give me some clarity on that.
SAPRA has been part of was appropriate. The problem is that its activities have not been to the attention of the, I don't think, the committee, but we find that in the report, in the previous annual report, Sarah, I would think that it's here to set up. Somebody want to add anything on?
There's nothing that I can add, except to say that it was
It was under the one who was running it was Edwin, was the one who was running it, but somehow it just disappeared. Yes, and sorry. No, I'm talking in terms of the activities of it. Because in one time it was gathering steam, but all of a sudden the activities just yes.
Okay. But I mean, under joint project facility, I imagine SARI is probably under there as well. I mean, perhaps you can mention that. Yeah. I know
it's. Can just look at it.
Thank you a lot for that.
Let's go to page 9.
On page 9, section 4.
We finished section 3. But if I understand the template correctly, this is an analysis of the strategic plan and operational plans of the department. What I want to propose, if members agree, that there must be a paragraph added here. Of an analysis of the plans and outcomes of the department and whether the department has achieved their goals and objectives during the year. We look at the aspects like like job creation. We look at aspects in the template on capital projects, major capital rollout in two major entities. We look at delivery of planned outputs. We can also look at the funding of SOEs, where most of the SOEs are funded off their own balance sheets, but it's under the guidance of the shareholder oversight. Or some of the guarantees given by the department or the government to certain SOEs. So I feel that to make this paragraph 3 complete, we need a paragraph or two on the analysis of the heading of paragraph 3.
Take note of the suggestion by the honorable member. Yes, I will include an analysis, start at the template, some of the guidelines, the way you interpret them. Sometimes you think that this is enough also, but I will take into consideration because as a draft, that's what we expected from the committee. Thanks, Chair. So I'll go to shareholder capital and debt because the honorable member I has already referred to. These are not necessary debt that has been said, funding that has been secured in this financial year. It's been funding that has been secured in the previous financial year, but I thought it best to bring all of it so that the members are aware how much funding that the SOEs have received from the credit market. And I updated it on the second paragraph on 4.1. With the 60 billion rand loan that was given to Eskom, making it to 176 billion in guarantees. But in total, the guarantees that have been given to Eskom are 350 billion. I think it's a printing error to say 200. It's 350 billion if we look at the annual report that the department brought to the attention of the committee. That's with 300 billion for Eskom. What also I have missed here is the 1.85 billion that has been given to Denel, which stands up until September next year. And the honorable member didn't see. 4.1A, the table there shows how much each SOE has received in terms of transfer from the department or from Treasury. From the previous from the 2010 financial year and the 2011 financial year. And if you look on 2012-2013, there won't be any further transfers to SOE. And that is also reflected in their budget. I did mention here that the department has indicated that in certain cases where SOEs need further funding, then they need to come up with public-private partnerships so that the private sector can come in, bring the skill, the money, and the investment itself. Gives three options, large international suppliers, and some other major sources of funding that need to be explored. I think members did mention this in one of the presentations of the SOE, especially as COVID, when they talked about their funding gap, that in other countries, big customers usually come to the party to contribute to the funding of the infrastructure plan. But in our case, that has not been, in South Africa, that has not been the case. Looking at the financial statements, this is for 2011, that is 1st April 2010. That is 1st April 2010 and 31st March 2011. The department received from Treasury 555.5 million. And then the table reflects how much each program spent. And then the total is reflected on the bottom. For the 2011 financial year, the department underspent about 15.6 million. And that money was, I'm not sure, but
sharing information with one of the members, it's something like 2.8%. And in terms of treasury rules, the certain amount that as a rollover, you cannot receive it. But the department did want to have this 15.6 million as a rollover. But on my notes, but it's not here. Treasury could only give them three point something million. But I will include it on the final draft.
Yes, Chairperson, there are two amounts we talk about money that have been made available. One in the SONA, State of the Nation, there is a president made available 9 billion for job creation. And the IDC, the treasurer, the Minister of Finance, in his address on the budget, mentioned there's 10 billion available by the IDC. Now, I just want to find out, because I'm worried about this money that they locked up in silos. 10 billion available to the IDC, and then 9 billion available for job creation. And there's another fee of 2.4 billion available for job creation. Now, we've heard this parasite that's coming up, this SO is coming up and saying there were big plans of job creation, et cetera, et cetera, but they are hamstrung by money. Notably, going into detail, we had this cadet scheme of theirs of training people, et cetera, et cetera. Also, you see, on pilot, the pilot, and then they have something like that. Yeah, this money is available. It's basically for job creation. Now, I'm just worried that the money is locked up in these financial prisons and made available. So the charter is going to come up, and the Minister of Finance is going to come up and tell the Parliament, money is available, but it is not asked for. Now, we as members of Parliament, the Excise Oversight, must be able to sensitize them. That is part of the recommendation, that they must use this money. Because, you see, this is not for the audience of Parliament. When you meet the SONA, the president coming up and says, so much money is available, so they say, we must stand innovation, and the money just lies there, and nobody asks for it. It's not only to be used by public sector so much, but by the private sector, but the government infrastructure should also use that money. So the money doesn't just get rolled over.
So go to somebody's pocket.
Exactly, which is worse, actually.
There were only three transfers that were made in the previous financial year. That is the 2010-2011 financial year. One was 36 million that was transferred to Alesco for the development of the Alexander Bay Township, and the other one was 181.2 million that was transferred to Daniel for the payment of indemnity granted to Daniel Sabah Infrastructure. 20 million also, I think this one came later. I think it was around September, in the last financial year. The 20 million that was given to PBMR for the decommissioning and dismantling of the fuel development laboratory. Looking at economic classifications, but then this one also is the administration. This table shows the current budget, that is 2011-2012, in which the department received 280.2 million. It looks at how much has been spent from the 1st of April up until June. Administration has spent almost 18% of the amount. And the energy and broadband program has spent 73.3%, legal 9%, manufacturing 9%, transport 11%, and the joint project facilities already spent 6%. In total, the department, out of that 250 million, it has spent 30.10%. That is for the 3 months from April to June. And then below that table, then I explain the department that have underspent.
which is the administration, program one and program five, which is transport enterprises. With regard to administration, the reason for underspending because of the vacant post in the program. With regard to transport enterprises, the same thing, compensation of employees due to a vacant post. This issue, I think, in the committee meeting of the department has been raised, that is a vacant post. Although this number came from Treasury, the presentation by the department made it clear that the vacant posts are no longer 26, but they're less than that now, because this information was for April up until June. So there are less posts that are vacant now. And then on 4.4, then I'm looking at the...
Before we move off this, and I think, you know, what we sort of are doing here is that Section 32 report, and we seem to be quite unbalanced here in number two, your energy and broadband. 73.3% of the budget already spent in the first quarter. We haven't done InfraCo yet. You know, we haven't had the annual report yet. But that looks terribly high.
Just on the same table on page 12, I think this is the DPA economic classifications, but it doesn't indicate here it's for what period. So I think in the heading it must say April to June 2011, that we know. Secondly, I want to ask, surely the Treasury economic classifications approach and find actual expenditure up to the second quarter, 30 September, surely it must be known already. So then this table must be replaced by a table to say either from April to September for the 6 months or July to September 2011, so that we can just get an updated presentation of what was actually spent. And then I agree with Honorable Borman. I think the what we need to look at, whatever the percentages are, is what is the outshooters. 73% after 3 months, unless it's cumulative, it's very high. It stands out. Similarly, joint project facility, only 6% spent. That's on the other extreme. Then we need to find the explanation. We need to analyze it at the end of the day. It's our job to analyze, because at the moment, if we just leave the table and we don't talk it to it, then I think there's an opening that we need to fill. Even there might be environments between the different programs. And I'm not sure whether Treasury includes in their final figures environments, shifts between various programs. And then on your last point of that, just before 4.4, 26 votes, but that was true. But when the department was here last week, after the event, they already reduced that vacancies to a lower number. And even if it's after the event, I think it'll be just be appropriate. Post the period that we're evaluating, we may just indicate that they are busy reducing the vacancies.
Thank you.
to the committee some of the information received from Treasury in terms of the templates. That's what documents are supposed to use. I think also the PG from the PE can maybe explain the expenditure on energy and broadband if the members feel it necessary to do so.
I don't
You know, Mr. Chairman, if I think about what has been raised, then the BRR would be a place where we could take away funds somewhere where it's not being spent and we can allocate it somewhere else. So if broadband needs a lot of money and these people are not spending, it would be better to reallocate it somewhere else so that it will be spent and not be lost like the first 15 million rand. So maybe somebody could tell us if there's a need for it. If there's not a need for it, then obviously that's it. It can go back into the fiscus.
Chairperson, I cannot comment specifically on the respective program spending. I don't have the numbers with me, and we are all sector specific. We have DDGs responsible for the various sectors, and this is not within my portfolio.
Oh. Page 12 on the bottom 4.4. This is for the 6 month period. That is from 1st April up until September. In total, in that period, the department has spent 37% of its budget. I remember earlier I said for the 3 month period, it spent 30% of its budget. But up to September, it has spent 37% of its budget.
That's exactly the point I made earlier. The table says 30% for the first 3 months. Paragraph 4.4 says 37% for the 6 months, which means by simple subtraction, they only spent in the second half, July to September, 7%, from 37 to 37. And that's why I think the whole, if that information is available from Treasury, that table 4.3 must be replaced by a table from April to September for the 6 month period. And that 37% must be explained. And any deviation out of the norm must be analyzed and say, but this is a shootout to the up to the top and this is a shootdown to the bottom end. This program is not spending and this program is overspending. And that's where the analysis comes in for the committee to say, wait a minute, let's see how do we recommend.
Chairperson, I don't want to belabor the point because I think we've made the point about it, but I just want to say, to get back to my initial statement when we started the meeting, it's very important that we as a committee see those Section 32 reports on a quarterly basis, because this is the very kind of thing that we can pick up on a quarterly basis instead of getting to the 6 months and then 9 months and even a year, and then all of a sudden we're finding out that we should have been monitoring something that we haven't been seeing.
Anyway, we have agreed with the department at the beginning of the year that we will engage on a 3 monthly period. So I think that would just be fair.
saying, I'll take note, Chairperson. I've taken note, Chairperson, of the suggestion by the members to look for the information from Treasury from April till September of the expenditure of the department, just to consolidate it. I don't want to go to goods and services, the compensation of employees, because that's what the department has been referring to, that the under expenditure in some programs is the result of the vacant posts. But like I said, and the member said, that the vacant posts are not necessarily 26, but they are lower than that now, because when the department came to the committee, they indicated that there had been some appointments. Transfer payments, there had been no transfer payments for this current financial year, the one that is under review. All the money that has been allocated for the department has been for administration and oversight purposes. None of the SOE have received any funding from the department.
So, Chairperson, why?
My answer as a researcher, Chairperson, will be that there has been a lot of money that has been pumped to SOEs. If we look at the past 8 or so years, remember when the government decided not to privatize, the SOEs came up, they said, then if you are to operate as state-owned, then you need to recapitalize us. They came up with figures. Each SOE said we will need 5 billion to operate profitably. Another one will come up with 4 billion and stuff like that. And then I think from 2002, that's what government has been doing, capital injections, giving them this money. And then around 2008 or 2007, from the government side, they realized that actually the problems are still there. And because CEOs will be there for 5 years, and sometimes they will get into contracts that run longer than 5 years. And those contracts will find that after 3 or 4 years, they are now a burden to the SOE. So government had to do something. They realized that, I think they spent something nearly 10 billion to all the SOEs, starting from 2004 up until 2009. So, and Treasury was always, every time that the SOE asked for money, was very reluctant to give them money. So I think this budget is a reflection of the history that has been happening within SOEs. That is why if you look at trend, and when you look at the expenditure trend analysis, the budget is coming down. The last time that the department got a huge budget, which was 3.9 billion, was in 2009-2010. So, Honorable Mr. Mokoyan, I think it's because government realized that Treasury cannot fund them ceaselessly. They need to be a stop. And because their balance sheet were not improving, that's another problem. Because if they had strong balance sheets, then they could go to the market and borrow money themselves. But the government is what they have told them now, that you need to go to the market. And if then your balance sheet is weak, then look at strategies. But the department right now, I've noticed in the annual report that they're doing reviews of each of the SOEs, whether the sectors they are operating, whether the strategies are viable, how long they're going to sustain themselves and stuff like that. Which means to me they've learned some lessons from the previous 5 or so years. I don't know if I've answered you, Honorable Member.
Yes, somebody has answered me. Except that I wanted just to find out, I might have been confused. If I transfer payment, you mean directly from National Treasury, you don't mean from the 230 million that the million are going to buy my treasury to the DPE.
Transfers usually come from Treasury. They give them to the department as part of the department's budget.
Like that 230 million.
From that 230 million, there has been no transfers in this current financial year.
I don't understand. Because the review of North highlighted between this 30 million and 37 million type of stuff. Now, if you say there's no transfer, I'm confused.
Can I say, in transfers on page 10, there the research indicates for the current financial year 2010-2011 there were three transfers. Alex Corp, broadband, two, and that amounted to 174 million. That's over and above the guarantees the government has supplied to the NEL, ESCOM, and others. That's separate from guarantees, loan guarantees, from actual transfers. What I have a problem with is on transfer payments 4.3. The first sentence says the transfer payments influence the over expended. They comprise 67% of the budget. It can't be. There's no way that transfers can be 68% of the total budget if we talk 2010-2011. Because in 2011-2012, the current year, if you look at that table of the researcher, there's no transfer. It's zero for the outer years. So for the previous year, the transfer cannot be 68% of the total budget. Maybe way past. So we must just realign the figures with percentage of transfers and how much of the budget that transfer comprised of. I question the 68% of the total budget, and together with it, 201 million.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. If I'm still on page 13, expenditure transfer program, I don't know if I have to go through each program here, but one thing that has came to our attention when the secretary was that this section needs to have some kind of analysis on the bottom of this section where we indicate whether in the expenditure trends there had been a decrease on each program or generally with the department budget allocation, and to give an assessment how what does this imply for the department and for the various SOEs if the department budget is being reduced, whether they will be able to meet some of the developmental state objectives or not. So that is the section that we need to include on the analysis per program.
Just to confirm, paragraph 4 is the analysis of the annual report and financial statements. We had the department last week. So based on this document of the VTR and the briefing by the department, I think I agree with the researcher. There must be a paragraph at the end of 4. Just the analysis of the annual report and financial statements. One paragraph, two paragraphs say they're good, they well managed, or whatever the case may be.
So if that is okay with the members, then I'll skip the expenditure transfer program. Since even in that section, there is a need for brief analysis just to indicate which direction, what this implies to the department and the various SOEs if the expenditure is coming down. Another, just a note, because we are guided by the template, which means we also have to include the analysis of the Auditor General. In this case, the Department of Public Enterprises had not had an unqualified, qualified report for the past 4 or so years. I don't remember a time where the department had a qualified report. So there isn't much there to say other than to say that the department has been consistent and it has always got clean audits. Still on page 15 of oversight report, which continues to page 16, the committee has only undertaken.
We finish with paragraph 5. And paragraph 5 is the expenditure trend. That is your section 32 expenditure report, and I just want to make sure that we will have a analysis of the spending patterns, mm-hmm. whether it's overspent or underspent, and the spending trend analysis. Treasury also indicating the template, the variables, the appropriation budget, the additional budget, the shifts in the environment. I think in the analysis, we need a paragraph again at the end of 5 to say this is all 5 up to 5.7, and then we say the analysis. And we need tomorrow to adopt this analysis of, say, give a good report or if what are the weaknesses.
Thank you, honourable member. On oversight report, the committee had that taken an oversight visit to Daniel, and that's the only oversight visit that the committee has undertaken. I look at the program of the committee. There are some oversight visits that the committee has planned. So we've only included Daniel, especially because the oversight was mainly to look at the challenges that were facing Daniel, especially the sub aerostructures division, of how the turnaround strategy that they spoke about in the previous financial year, if that has been implemented, what measures have been taken to ensure that the division becomes profitable. So that was the only oversight visit that we undertook as a committee. I don't know if members have any questions on that one. If they are not, then in terms of the template, then there's supposed to be committee observations, because this is a draft together with the committee secretary. These are the committee observations that we made.
Sorry to interrupt. Just before we get to this, in the template, there's two other issues, the consideration of reports of SCOPA and any other resources of sources of information. Now, Comrade Aubrey referred earlier to a SOE that had an irregular expenditure of 8.5 billion. Yeah. And including there was quite a substantial fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So I want to say that maybe we should consider to put here the paragraph on the template, consideration of reports from the Committee of Public Accounts. And then we put there, we haven't received any report. What worries me, and I don't know if the committee secretary can help us, whether we can report on another committee. Maybe it's forbidden. But I would suggest, if it's allowed, that we put a new paragraph 7 before the committee observations on consideration of SCOPA reports. We haven't received the report, despite the fact that we've noticed that Transnet has over irregular expenditure of more than 8 billion rand, and we express an opinion that SCOPA has not even called this entity to interrogate and to see what happened and had a public hearing on it. If it's allowed, if it's not allowed in terms of the rules of Parliament, that's fine. But I don't think we should just let it go. I think it's important for the people.
Dr. Gordon has covered another one. Two little points. Oversight visit. Where would you classify the trip to Venezuela? Would that be the foreign expenditure? And number two, the workshop, strategic workshop that we had at Shelley Point, and the other one that we had now in Dusta, now recently. So that we don't come across as just having had one oversight visit to Dinah. To complete the picture. I don't know in terms of your format of reporting, whether the study told you, whether the telephone is covered, or you have a separate category for study tools. And then another one for these two workshops that we had in the spring school, as well as the the strategic workshop, the strategic workshop at the Cherry Point, where it goes 3-4. Your report.
The committee will respond.
Yeah, so thank you, Mr. I think we're only looking at the oversight report of PNS, because we're looking at information that will assist in terms of interventions that the committee did. Yeah, we're only looking at like interventions, like there was a problem at PNS and the committee went. That's part of oversight. So the workshop is not necessarily will be considered as an oversight.
The last words of Mr. Poskaiti said that's the only oversight visit by the committee. It gives the impression that he did nothing else in terms of oversight. That's my worry. You just repeat that very for future person. No, not that part. Perhaps I misheard you.
No.
I want to find out if. In terms of oversight, it is just only one category, there will be another category for education, exactly. Thank you, Honorable Lord, education, and another one for this is study tours and the study workshop. Understand? Well, what scope does this, what you're saying, if it comes? Does it exclude other things and just focuses on certain things?
Thanks, Honorable Member. The template, like the Secretary of the Committee has indicated, will see interventions to the type of oversight visits will be those that kind of require intervention from the committee as part of oversight. So when I said that's the only. Maybe I should have qualified to be in this report, but I know that we had an international oversight visit. But I think you're right, Honorable Member, just to find out if this is the only one that qualifies to be in this report or not.
For the purpose of
I strongly recommend that we follow Mr. Mokwena's proposal. That we include on our oversight the four interventions, because in a sense it was intervention. We had all the state-owned entities at Shelley Point. We went to a good corporate governance on a study tour, and we had a spring school. We had two of the major entities interact in intervention. I'd really, if they want to throw it out, they can throw it out. But I think we propose that we put the four issues as proposed by Mr.
I'll take a note of that. Thanks, sir. Thanks, Chairperson. The template of the report also talks about observation from the view of the committee. We made a draft of the observations. Some obviously does not necessarily have to be here, but I think the section is open for members to make their input about their observations, about the expenditure and the operational plan of the department, strategic objectives, and everything.
I suggest that we, bullet number 3, we delete.
Okay.
It's really not here nor there. The Presidential Review Commission is something of the future. It will come with recommendations. It's not addressed anywhere in the report up to now. So you can't make a recommendation unless you address it in the body of the report. Number 2, I would, on bullet number 4 on page 16, I would suggest that the Transnet 8 billion, we mentioned the exact amount, I think it was 8.5 or 8.3, and 8.4, and then including in that 8.4 was a certain amount of fruitless and wasteful expenditure that we also highlighted to say that's a subsection all together or separate. That's my observation on recommendations. And recommendations can only be completed as well as the, well, the recommendations later on can only be completed once we completed the analysis. And once we have the analysis, we can do recommendations. We cannot do recommendations if the analysis is not complete.
I would like to be facetious. I know we've covered this thing, but it just escapes my mind. How the auditor then becomes good luck to be something. It just escapes my mind. If the auditor general cannot with a whole plethora of auditors, you cannot pick up in scope at 8.4 billion. Even scope did not pick it up. Even scope did not pick it up. I mean, they pick up, I wouldn't say small amounts, they pick up 5 point something million, 10 point something million, 20 million here and there with water affairs, et cetera, et cetera, and human settlement. But they cannot pick up 8.4 billion, 84,000 million. It's unbelievable.
Like the honorable member I've just said, the section on observation will also form part of the fully analyzed draft, and then also the conclusion. I think there is some need to rework the conclusion, but I won't do anything with the recommendation. I will leave it open because it's a draft, and then like the honorable member who said that once the report, the final draft is in place, then members can make recommendations. Thank you, Chairperson.
Any comments?
On conclusion, I would suggest that we not use the word satisfied. We must be very scarce with that word.
We must be very stingy with that.
Yeah. Rather, the committee sees an improvement or similar like that. And this department is not a service delivery department. We see the improvement in the service management or something like that, what we saw in the annual report and the financial statements. It's really a well-managed department, but it's not in the classic sense a service delivery department. So, and also recognize the shareholder role in overseeing 9 state-owned entities. I think that must be recognized in the conclusion, as well as the governance oversight model that we're using in South Africa.
Yes, I think we should pass some complimentary remarks there, but the GP has been doing its work for many years, especially the new minister and the deputy minister, and very assertive and Clara, DG, and they're doing an excellent job. I want to team and the cooperation of the rest of the departmental functionaries. I think we should actually note that acknowledge the good of the team. Now, next little point, I must still go, but I'm not a stickler. I want to go to this. Scopa normally would dragoon us when they receive when they see a normal issue. In this case, I think we must invite them. We have actually invited them in another patrol committee first, that they had to come and just come and explain their anomalies. We must actually write to Mr. Temba, Honorable Temba Godi, and just say, this is what has been picked up. We just want.
He's suspended. You can't talk.
Sorry?
He's suspended.
Who?
Temba Godi.
From who?
Suspended.
Who's
not as a member of parliament. Continue.
No. Whoever is in charge, let us assume it's not suspended. But we, as a patrol committee, you know, we must liberate ourselves from this. Otherwise, you see, this thing is just going to be swept under the carpet, man.
How many of them are there that could suspend him?
Huh? Yeah, I'm just saying, Chairperson, we, as a patrol committee, must actually write to Scopa and say, Scopa, it has been brought to attention that there's this outrageous anomaly of the 8.4 billion, etc. We just have to find out how this escaped your attention when you're making presentations, by transit. We should elevate to that level in order to liberate ourselves, because others will be guilty of dereliction of duty.
Okay. Does this bring us to the end of this report, the draft? Thank you so much, Mr. Boscati, for this draft. And I think. When must we have the final draft? Tomorrow. Okay. I think this brings us to the end of this part of our agenda. Yeah, no. Thank you. You want a 5-minute break?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. That is the
Thank you.
What's my happy hour doing? My happy hour partner.
And economic overview of Venezuela as a country.
Basically, it gives an overview of the political dispensation in Venezuela in terms of the presidency and the kind of economic policy that they pursue in Venezuela. And also gives a the second paragraph gives an overview of the number of the SOEs in Venezuela, that how much are there, and also how government uses them to advance its socialist agenda. And also, we capture the opposition, how the opposition feels about the role that the ruling party is pursuing in terms of nationalization, and what they feel about the government, the economy, and the people, the resistance, and all that. And then.
Yes, I think last time we said that we, in the report on the first page, we were going to reflect the cost of the trip as well. I think we decided that. Was I wrong or? I mean, it was in the public domain already, so I mean, there's nothing we can hide. So just put it on there and that's it. I mean, and that was decided at the meeting, I think, when we were in that room.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Although we did not mention where it must be on the report, but I think we have to...
You said the cost was 1.3.
No, I'm saying we can put it under 1.3.
Oh, I see.
Over the overview. Of
okay.
I just want to remind the members so that we don't start this now from scratch.
Sure.
That we had given ourselves an opportunity to actually give some input in us getting this draft. And I don't think all of us have responded to that. So I just want us to not to start from scratch really, but we must. I'm not saying we mustn't raise issues that we think are very important to the report itself, because we mustn't, leave those out. Honourable Sonto,
Chairperson, in line with what you are saying, I'm just wary of a situation where we were there for a week,
yeah,
or 3 days. Yes. And we'll take our findings of the week without looking at where did the country came from. It would be a bit of a political disaster on our part, an improper kind of an analysis, if we would judge the current government of that country without looking at where that government, where did the government take that country from. Now, there are historic issues that a trip of a week cannot delve into, you see. Thank you.
Honorable Dem, we're on page two.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And notwithstanding what Honorable Santo is saying, I also looked at the heading of this thing, of point number two, and from reading it.
Point two.
Yeah, that's the point that he raises. If one reads it, then his point is misplaced, because this section here deals with a political and economic overview of Venezuela, and it looks more back. One should find out whether that point is not accommodated further, because this point doesn't speak of 2011. He's basically telling us this is the political and economic overview of Venezuela, but the entire flow of it speaks more of that point should be found somewhere. I think we should find that point to be made. I'm just saying that it's misplaced in that reading there where it suggests. And I'm trying to look at a suitable heading.
Oh, are you saying what Honorable Santo is raising? Cannot be captured under this. Honorable September?
No, Chair.
What are you saying?
No, Chair. I'm also looking at the same time.
Whether or not it shouldn't be placed somewhere else.
Yeah, because if you look, I don't want to take us right, but if you look much further in the report, there's another heading similar to that.
Honorable Failing, why don't you say?
I must also apologize that I haven't sent through all of these comments beforehand, but I thought that this was something that we would work through as a committee. So this is a difficult thing to deal with as well, because I can see there will be some disagreements on emphasis and things like that. So I would prefer to bring these points up and debate them as we go on. In terms of the political and economic overview of Venezuela, I mean, I think that what's important, particularly for our purposes, and what needs to be put into an overview, is to talk about where Venezuela is at in terms of its policies, which we have done in terms of its approach to that, but then also to talk about the kinds of macroeconomic environment that it's operating in at the moment. And I think that it's important to register the inflation rate, it's important to register the debt that has been accumulated, because all of these things speak to state-owned enterprises and their role within that particular context. I mean, there is, for instance, a line here: through socialist policies, the government managed to eradicate illiteracy through the introduction of free schooling up to PhD level. Now, that's not necessarily applying to the political and economic overview. So one could contest whether that should be in there. I just think we should have the full overview, and we should put all the facts in so that we have that.
Before we left, we received a report from the researcher on the economic profile of the two countries. When we arrived in the two countries, we also received profiles by the embassies on the economic and political profiles of the two countries, on both cases. For me, it's a straightforward, non-contentious issue. It is an overview, not particularly favoring a certain system or not. It is doing what you get in this little booklet on South Africa when any visitor comes here, on key economic measurements and factors. what is your growth rate, what is your inflation, what is your job creation or your employment levels. So I don't think it can do any harm. If not, we need to change the heading, because it says political and economic overview of Venezuela, paragraph 2, and if you go to paragraph 8.1, it says a political and economic overview of Brazil. So we need to be consistent and just have a brief overview. The danger is that you can go into a few pages of the economic and political overview, and that's not what we want. We really want for the reader that is when it's going to be published in the ATC, just to have a bird's eye view of the political and economic overview of Venezuela and Brazil. Independently factual, straightforward, short, one paragraph.
I agree with you on it, Mr. Chairman. But I also, when I read through the report, you know, we came and we saw, and we saw that there was quite a bit of poverty as well, and I don't see that reflected in this report as well. So we must add that in somewhere. Please, it would give me rest for my mind. I mean, we must put it in there. I mean, we did see it.
That there was a bit of poverty.
Yeah, that there was a lot of poverty there.
That there was a bit of poverty.
On page 2.
Where can we put it in?
What about the bit of poverty? That is on the card.
So where is it?
No, he's looking for a place to put it in. I mean, it's just reminding us.
The poverty.
Yeah.
Yeah, the poverty that we saw.
I didn't see poverty.
What did you see? Lots of wealthy people.
No, I didn't see wealthy. How do you see that? How do you see that? How do you measure that?
I saw a lot of poverty.
Well, no, I'm not saying you didn't see. I'm just saying I didn't see. Honorable Van Dijk, Mr. Van Dijk?
Chairperson, I see on page 3.
Page 3.
The paragraph on the top, it's now part of this paragraph 2, where we said that people are marches, you know, they are marches for better wages.
3.2?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, not 3.2.
What? You said page 3?
On top
3?
Of page 3.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. The second paragraph from the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if we want to add what Honorable Van Dalen requested, we can add it to that paragraph there, where we say that the opposition felt that the promises we made to work with the nationals, you know, and they are there. We can see the unhappiness in this paragraph.
Yeah.
They won't go protest for nothing. Maybe we can just add, you know, he said there was a decline in some economic activities, etc. The wording was changed.
Honorable September?
Yeah, no, there's no difficulty with what is raised. It is just, again, it's the neatness of what Honorable Tangas is saying. So I think, I want to say again that if you look at the heading of... if you look at the heading of this thing, political and economic overview, that's what this thing speaks about.
Yeah.
But if you look further in the report, there are headings called findings and so on. And let's not waste our time here on page 2 and 3 and so on.
Okay.
It can nicely be fitted in, you know, in these other findings that we've had and so on. This one speaks specifically to a particular thing.
Sorry, that's fine.
How was the nationalization of the company? Because the members said that it was a good service. So how did that do?
entity. And then also the last paragraph, what is the entity? What sort of entity is it? The particular line of mobile and internet services, pages on point, as well as directory services. Many of the companies provide services to all the people in which they need the digital device after transmission before. 2.2 is just going to be Alpha. It's a airline. So we do the same thing, just by highlighting the performance of the entity and also what the entity does. And we also try to highlight as to how the entity is regulated, what are the regulatory institutions that highlight the aviation services in there as well. We also highlighted here the board of the airlines report to unwanted by the Civil Institute of Aeronautica, which also reports the Minister of Public Administration. 3.3 is Aeropostal, which is also an airline. We highlight in the first paragraph that the airline itself was owned by this corporation, which is a total company, and then how it got to be nationalized. Because we also highlight in the second paragraph that because of the drug trafficking case and some other maladministration within that particular entity, that the government of Venezuela decided to nationalize this particular entity. And then also highlighting on the third paragraph, this airline was mainly nationalized in the basis of giving access to people who ordinarily did not afford to fly in Venezuela. And also the fleet, that airline will inform that there are only 6 aircraft.
And I also don't see in the report that that company have 1,200 employees for the 6 aeroplanes.
Yeah.
So 1,100 employees for that one company to fly the 6 aeroplanes. That's quite a lot.
I think you should write it in there.
PWP. EPWP.
Then we've got FOCA, which is a company. And also in the first paragraph, they give a description of the company and where it falls within the internet, where in the forestry. And then it mandates that it was mainly this mandate is to transforming and building a caring for people that in line with the country's national plan. And the second paragraph, we did a synopsis of how the entity is reported in terms of and where is it aligned in which happening. For FOCA is about 15,050 hectares of land and 10 out of the population and the entity claims to make 900 hectares to its operation to increase its output and pulp. Also highlighting the last paragraph there, that Venezuela is the next importer of forest products. And the highest imports are pulp and paper, which are mainly used for newspaper and packaging for food products and industrial cars, amongst others. And then for agropatria, which is an agriculture company, that the establishment of this agriculture under the land in 2010 was a direct instruction from the president of Venezuela. there we also tend to highlight as to how the process and the policy development, right? The objective of the develop different policies to address the food crisis and in conflict to actually eliminate food shortages in Venezuela. And also there we might highlight the mandate of the entity the machinery that the entity has, with the assets, like with $1,000 tractors, and which countries to work with. It would, we also mentioned something that was off the bed, and it would appear that agriculture is able to meet the Nigerian food consumption demand. However, the Democratic Action, which is the opposition party there, disagrees with that. That the country is imposing any food requirements. That's to highlight the contradiction of the rest of it. The mining companies, which is many of them, we highlight when the company was nationalized. The government of Venezuela introduced a legislation to further the state material take control of the mining activities to benefit further the profit of those mining activities to benefit the people of Venezuela, and also highlighting how the profits are being managed and also the sub-components and the land that the company owns. Also, just giving a background on the project paragraph too, before the mining land was introduced, how mining was handled in Venezuela, mining activities were managed in Venezuela. Superintendent, deals with the
current state. Honorable Gunter, you can please hang up.
So listen, what I wanted to say was that the picture that is given, the correct picture that gives us a perspective, starting from 99 to now, I still want to raise the point that what we saw wouldn't have changed from 2010. What is this? 2000 to now. So we must have that kind of an understanding that the historic poverty that is there is being addressed by these measures, especially when you look at the previous one, where there are food, there are initiatives that seek to address food crisis. I'm trying to commend the way that this thing is being projected. Thank you very much.
The problem is, we can't make a true assessment of that, to be honest. We've been given contradictory reports as to the effectiveness. This says an agricultural one. They say they import 90% of the food. You know, the opposition says that this has an acronym. You know, I think that...
the opposition says that it's not 90%.
It says that they import 90% of their food and that the agricultural production is stored and all that. The point is that I quite like the way this has been done, because you're staying away from this debate to talking about the effectiveness of whether this is worse or not, because we honestly can't be in a position to judge, and if we start to do that, then it's going to get political. And I think that it's better to put it in this particular way. I think this is something we can all look at in terms of that.
Chairperson, yes, I can recall that, like the previous speaker says, that we've heard no contradictory views. But what has been said is that, and I think, you know, we must take note of that, is that in the past, Venezuela exports agricultural products. At present, they import. You know, so it changed the other way around. since this dispensation that they went into. And I mean, you know, if
that's
deliverable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We try and give
to highlight how the two private and public, just a fair view as to how they operate together, because that's what we're informed. And in terms of the charges, the disability to the people, as to which one is more accessible to the people and what is the other one does differently from the other one. Yeah. And then also try and highlight the main Venezuelan Banco Industrial, which is the Bank of Venezuela. Yeah. As to how it assists the people there and that. And then also the regulation. The next paragraph says that the regulations governing banks are the same for both public and private banks. The difference is with regard to their relationship with the policy of the state. The banking system comprises 5% of public banks and 25% of private banks. The Bank of Venezuela is the most efficient and profitable NS and has the biggest client base of 5.8 million. The Venezuelan National Railway, which is the one that builds the railways in Venezuela. The organization responsible for the railway infrastructure in Venezuela, and it falls under the Department of Communication and Transportation, and it is guided by the country's national plan. The second paragraph seeks to just give a view as to the assets of that particular entity, as to the kilometer of railway network that it
I just wonder if, in terms of statistics, instead of saying the Public Bank of Venezuela has got a client base of 5.2 million people, not that it's expressed in percentage terms, they say they want 60% of the market share. Well, then that's
there.
Exactly. Instead of saying 5.2, because then they don't tell you why the other. The only private bank is resident. So it's better to say 60%, which is what the Minister of Finance said.
Yes. That was the general, wasn't it? I also don't read about this.
It's like the generals were all in charge of these companies.
No, Minister of Finance. I prefer to say Minister of Finance. Use that head too. He didn't come there with the ammunition.
When you have money.
If we go to 3.9, which is the Venezuela National Electrical Corporation, Copoelec, we try and give the background. The company was privately owned until 2009, when the country was plunged into a spate of blackouts as a result of drought and a lack of hydroelectric capacity generation. And then also, it just gives just to give a background as to why it was nationalized. And then the second paragraph just gives a highlights, because this is one of the entities that the committee felt that it gives a better model of what is it that they mean by socialist management model. So we say that Copoelec is a socialist management model with participation of workers and community in the board and management of the entity. The board of nine directors is dominated by workers and who oversees the corporation. The corporation is described as a diaper company promoting 21st century socialism. Also here we're giving a highlight of the industry itself, as to how many companies are there in the electricity industry involved in the generation, transmission, distribution, and marketing of the thing.
Yeah, this was the brother of Shivas, right? He was the guy in charge of the company. Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose
Honorable Van Dalen?
I support that the word brother because it's...
You must say president, man.
Going to 2.10, which is the oil company PGVSA, the JEPSA. The governing party draws its conviction of state ownership of minerals and energy resources from its famous and popular founding father, namely Simon Bolivar, who resolved that anything beneath the earth belongs to the state. So this company, we have stated that it is the biggest company owned by the state in Venezuela, and its objectives of the oil company is mainly for job employment creation and to advance the country's economic development objectives. On this particular paragraph, the next one at the bottom of page 8, we just highlight what the business of the company is: exploration, production, refining, and exporting of oil, which includes natural gases. Yeah. 3.11 on the second and front page 9, the iron and steel industry, which is CITO, the name of the company, the steel company. Here, amongst any other of the entities, they mention that the company is guided by the values and principles, which include humanism, patriotism, socialist ethics, discipline, efficiency, loyalty, excellence, collective vision, solidarity, and honesty. We also highlight how the company started and when the government started to nationalize it. In the second paragraph, we give a background of the work and business of the company as to what it used to do and what kind of technology they use. The third paragraph, it says that the steel industry places Venezuela at fourth place as a steel producer in Latin America and the largest on the Andean region. The company has successfully placed its production level at about 4 million tons of liquid steel per year, with productivity indicators, total yield of quality, time length of delivery, and customer satisfaction comparable to most competitive companies in Latin America. And also, what was the motive behind the nationalization of the company in there?
Position to somebody else.
No, but the chair.
No, I think what you must do is that, you know, when those people gave or briefed us, it was the ruling party and opposition. So I think we must decide now what, how do we want to capture on the, in this one, the opposition.
The lady was in charge of this company.
Yes.
She was sitting in court there.
Okay. So I'm just saying we must try to find agreement in how we want to present our report. But I don't think we should be torn apart by what we believe about this or that. So let's try to find some common ground in the way we want the end product of this report to be. Honorable Mkwena?
Who's at the clink? As I said, the presenter who was from the ruling party reported that. Then it's clear that where the version came from. It was not from the ruling party. That said, then in that case, we're not casting aspersions in the center, we're not embellishing and glorifying the report.
September.
Just to respond to what you are saying, I think our responsibility is to make sure that the report is factual.
Yes.
And so I think where, if the secretary has omitted certain things, because it's not about what we like.
Yeah.
It's not that thing. It's about factual. So if they gave us a report in that meeting that says things are going very fine, everything is, that's what they said.
That's what we wanted.
That's for us now to, he's just reporting the factuality of that thing. It's not for us to cast anything. So I think on the honourable members' query, if there's a doubt about the factuality that happened at that precise moment, then I think that helps us.
I think that under the question time, Mr. Chairman, that the woman did admit that the productivity was down, but it was satisfactory to them, but it was down from before it was nationalized. We asked that question to them, and that's when they told us that. So she did admit that it was down from what it was, but it was satisfactory to them.
I agree with Mr. Mkwena that to say the presenter was from the ruling party. The second point that I picked up, he stated clearly right in the beginning, the vision was a socialist corporation. That's factual. And if you need to put it in, that's what happened.
So maybe it would be a good idea if under point three, and I go back to page three, where it's the heading, and it says state-owned enterprises. Maybe we should say a report back from state-owned enterprises, or a report from them. So that, I mean, it looks like we are making the summary. This is what they told us. We have to take it at the face value.
No, I agree with the proposal in the beginning, and then seconded by our Gornoff that they carry on, because on in paragraph 7 we come actually to our findings. What we, so we will come to that.
Thank you.
I just wonder, I think it will impress Mr. Sonto himself. Well, Sonto, because he did have an x-ray conducted on the spot and with very, very successful results. that shows the deficiency.
You want to give the report? Members are going to say that there must be a copy of the X-ray onto the report.
sorry, that X-ray is not on the agenda. We are in paragraph 4.
Oh, please.
Paragraph 5, okay. Go.
You want the X-ray?
The objectives of state ownership, according to the Venezuelan administration, are meant to overcome the country's socio-economic challenges and to change the structure of the state. There was an obstruction to building socialism. State-owned companies in Venezuela are guided by two objectives, namely employment creation and economic development. Generally, all the SOEs in Venezuela report to the Portfolio Committee of Administration and Services. The regulatory policy framework for each SOE is conducted by the relevant institute. There are regulatory bodies for different sectors of the economy. For instance, all airlines are subjected to the regulatory framework of both the National Institute of Aviation and the Civil Institute of Aeronautical. The overall role of SOEs in the country's developmental agenda is guided by the government's national plan, which is over a period of 5 years. Much emphasis is placed on the role of to be played by workers in all SOEs and various communities who stand to benefit from their services through communal councils. All structures within SOEs in Venezuela are established by the Venezuelan Commercial Code. The assumption is that issues of corporate governance are contained in the code. The Venezuelan civil law gives guidelines to the standard and norms of services rendered by all arms of government, including state-owned companies. The ruling party is involved in the appointment of board members, and the latter then appoints the management team. There was frequent reference to the terms president and vice president, with the implication that these incumbents were either board chairpersons or chief executive officers of the various state-owned enterprises. Not once was the term chief executive officer or board chairperson used by the Venezuelan administration during the presentations, except by the South African delegation. Consequently, there was less talk about corporate governance principles, especially the role of audit and risk committees.
Mr. Kleiner?
Yeah, there's a couple of points I'd like to make here. One of them, and if we're talking about the regulatory environment, and I specifically asked questions on this and didn't seem to get any clarity, that there doesn't seem to be an overarching policy guiding the process of nationalization, for instance. So it's, and I think that needs to be put in there, is the fact that a lot of the nationalizations are done by presidential decree and are not done according to a guiding policy. So there's policy uncertainty with regards to what becomes state-owned and what remains in private hands. The same can also be said around the compensation policy for those companies that are nationalized. I think it is important to put those facts in there because it's not necessarily political, but it is the fact. The other issue, I'm not sure if we want to put it in there, but what we found, or certainly what I found, was that a lot of the so-called CEOs in that of some of these companies were members of the military. And it is a generalized fact that it's quite a militarized state. And I'm not sure what the procedures are for who gets appointed CEO of these companies. But the fact remains that a number of military personnel seem to be put in charge of some of these state-owned entities. And I think that needs to be put in there as well.
Any comments?
I think we must be careful. I hear very well what the Honorable Lansford is saying. But is Venezuela not a democracy? Because they do go for elections. And they with the multi-party parliament, opposition, etc. The fact of who they deploy, the background, etc., because we've got ministers of religion hating this and that, or previous superstars. I don't think we should be appeared with that page. Then others are going to say in America, with the whole governor of the state of California being a film star and so on. And I don't think we should go that way. But I think we should take cognizance of the other good things as mentioned. But I don't think we should appear as really casting aspersions and the background of members of the cabinet, their background, where they come from. I think we shouldn't stoop like that, because we will face a barrage of criticism that we'll be able to defend. Let's try and be as objective as possible and put away our dislikes. Let's come with as honorable Septimus and let's be fair. Yeah, let's rise to the occasion instead of sinking, because we're parliamentarians. And these people are going to come here one day, and when they come here and then they see also how the skeletons are covered, they'll just have to find. That's what they did to us, then they go and splash them all over the place, and they'll go on the internet, and I don't think we'll like it. Yeah.
Was September?
Well, I think he probably was drawing the point. What I wanted to say on the... I remember very well, and the Sangmas just confirmed this, we asked that they provide us with the constitution and relevant legislation. And that point needs to be backed up by, because in any event, they were supposed to send us more information. So I think that point needs to be double checked against that background, so that again, we remain factual in our report. So instead of just inserting it there, let's find the constitution, their constitution and the legislation, which we did ask for.
Yeah, I'll withdraw the issue around the military personnel, that if I still find it quite strange.
With gun blazing.
But I think that the issue around the appointment of CEOs of state, and there was still, from my side at least, there was confusion as to how CEOs were appointed, what the process was around that. But perhaps you've got more clarity on it. But, you know, it seemed to be at the discretion of the president. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but that was my feeling.
Thank you for that, and I think we have consensus then. We will get the information from the Constitution and legislation, and I think you addressed the appointment of board members and management teams. That is in here. You've just read it. Are you satisfied with that one? Anything else that you want to include here? Are everybody clear about it? Okay. Paragraph 6. Thank you.
comprises, just delete off, sorry. Comprises, not off. Constitutes of or comprises? Just of or comprises without the of.
Instead of saying findings, why don't you say observations on the committee?
what you observe is so saying you are found.
Not observe.
No, it's a separate topic completely. It's a separate point. I'm just saying the subject in there, instead of saying findings, you must say observations. Because we are not finding ourselves, just saying what we observed. Then, of course, that's a separate issue to it. Instead of saying findings, because findings must be research, investigation, and empirical stuff. We didn't have the chance to do that. We're only there just to observe, to learn and observe. So the point I'm raising is that instead of saying findings, as somebody say, observations.
Another for September?
What could help there is that the words are being said in the following way. The success of public entities according to whoever it is that we want to say, is as a result of investment in human resources. Why I'm saying that is, whether we like it or not, that's what they said. So it's not attributed to us.
Oh,
can I be protected, Chair? This is howling now, that is finding. No, I'm saying, what do we do about the fact that we found them saying that? What do we do about that address? Because again, it's not about what we like or not. We found them saying that. We have a contesting view on a range of things that they have said. But let's not, you know, we mustn't lose ourselves here. We found them saying
that. Okay, I won't help, Chair. But, the point is that this isn't our observations and this isn't what people have told us. So what we choose to put into findings is what we choose to put in there. The fact that someone said this doesn't mean that it's our finding. And in fact, this isn't our finding. I mean, my finding certainly is not that the success of public entities is as a result of investment in human resources. If anything, I mean, if we want to contest these points, I mean, the IOL has found that worker rights at a lot of these nationalized entities, in fact, haven't been respected properly. So I certainly would be loath to put this finding in as a finding of the committee, having heard all the presentations and what people have told us. This is not my finding.
I want to make a suggestion. We scratched the whole first line, and then we put in there the participation of communities in government structures and public interest through communal councils and employment through union representatives. That's what we found there. We saw. So I suggest that we scratch the whole first line, up to labor, the point. 7.1.4, we scratched the whole first line from the success right down to the point where it are behind labor. I would be comfortable with that.
There's nothing wrong in supporting what you're saying, but I'm trying. It doesn't read. There's a word missing.
I just want to scratch the whole first line from the beginning to the end where it says point. It says it starts with the and it ends with labor and then a point, right, that whole line. And then the second sentence can go through.
What were you saying? What you say?
No, I say we delete.
No, what you observed.
Yeah, but we observed and we saw that the participation of communities and government structures of public entities through communities, the participation that there was between the two, we saw that. I mean, when we went to visit that other place.
But I'm saying that there's a word then missing. So it's either that, the, something like that. In any case, I mean, the semantics, that stuff, it must be cleaned up. It's so difficult to use.
Can I have a shot on point four? The aim of the Venezuelan government is the participation of communities in government structures of public entities through communal councils and employees through union representatives. That's what we saw. And that's what they told us.
Yeah.
The communities on the mining,
the 5% given to the mining communities in, yeah. And even in the deep rural areas, the mining gave another certain percentage to this this whole concept of governance structures in empowering the communities. I think that that can stand as a finding.
As a journalist, and must we start again? Okay, I suggest we start again with journalists as well.
Yeah.
Can we go back to the first place?
Can we
take your stomach?
Again, I have a problem again. I think you can delete our self-sufficient and sustainable, and you can delete that, keep going, and then at the end of most entities have made profits and the proceeds are used to fund. We don't know if they made profits. I mean, we can't say that is a finding of ours. So we say, we can say proceeds are used to fund government development agenda. But we can't say that they have made a profit and they do distribute it. So I suggest we delete are self-sufficient and sustainable, and then on the bottom of that, most entities have made profits, and we delete that from this sentence, please. Yeah, my suggestion is, Afrikaans praat. That we take 7.1.5. It says public entities are self-sufficient and sustainable. And but we say public entities do not receive capital from government. They stated that. They said that. So we can make that a finding. And we can say proceeds are used to fund government's developmental agenda. We can state that because they told us that. But we can't say that they are self-sufficient and that they made a profit. We never saw any books to the fact of that. They could have told us anything.
You're right, Chair. They did say that. In the spirit of what we said earlier on, that's what they say. You see, as soon as we place ourselves in there, the mistake that we keep on making is we place ourselves in there. And we now we want to carry on heading for headlines and stuff like that. It's a big mistake that we're trying to make. Let's stay as we agreed on the factual line and not get over emotional here about what we like and don't like. This little committee doesn't have any power to change Venezuela from where we are. It's a report that we're dealing with. So I think the sooner we accept that, the better for us. I'm not quite sure what we are attempting to do now to change what is there. It's not for us to do that.
I mean, I think, okay, let's get back to basic principles on this. I think, yes, okay, we're not going to see eye to eye and everything. And in fact, my findings would be different from somebody else's findings that you come in at from a different perspective. Okay, but I think the factual stuff can be put into the observations, into what has been told to us. When we as a committee say these are our findings as a committee, we are then putting some value judgment onto this. It's not just saying we have been told that these companies have made a profit and therefore we have found this to be the case. When we're saying we are saying what are the lessons for us as a committee, that's what the findings need to tell us. So the findings of us as a committee, as a shared committee, we have to have agreement upon what we believe we found after all of these presentations, after all the stuff that's been told to us. What is it that we can take away and believe is of relevance to us as a committee in South Africa? I mean, I think that needs to be in there.
Let's not, Chair, maybe appeal that we don't go that route because now we're really deviating.
from what we agreed upon earlier on and how we want to construct this report. Of course we're going to disagree with each other, but you know, it sounds like the meeting is now generating into the first day we had in Venezuela where the temperature was going sky high until it was happy hour. Maybe you should create a happy hour and then there will be some cooling down here. But now what we're really trying, I think it's a bit unfair, honorable member, what we are attempting to do. Now, of course, the journalist is here, so the temperature will go higher, and it's now scoring points into getting into what, and so on. The poor man came rushing in here. So I think we should, let's not do that. Let's get over with this report and get it done. If we really think that from where we are, we want to now, through a report, wanting to remove Chavez, this is not what we went there for. It's just ludicrous. So I think it's ludicrous to suggest that we see and we did not see. We heard and we did not. It's just madness if we think that this is how we're going to carry on. So I want to formally say we can't support what's been asked on that clause.
So, Mr. Chairperson, to suggest that I want to remove Chavez is ludicrous by itself. I just said I'm not comfortable with the wording in the sentence. I mean, it's a structure of a sentence. So if we can't agree on that, then we won't agree on this report. I mean, it's as easy as that. Or we, as a committee, agree on it, and then we go forward. I mean, it's a couple of words. If that's so important that I want to remove Chavez and create an international incident about it, I mean, it's not so difficult.
Try to find what we saw. I think we said it in one of the findings, that's number 3713. But I want to get to your closing remarks when we close that session in Venezuela. And that is that we said the economic path chosen by Venezuela is socialism. And we must respect that. And we wish them well in that. That's what we saw, and if we want to record it here as a finding, that's fine. And then I think it we must say that the public entities do not receive capital from government, and then we can say most entities are self-sustainable, and the proceeds are used to fund the government's developmental agenda. That's what I can remember, what we saw there. They say they don't receive capital, they are self-sustainable, the proceeds go to the developmental state agenda. And they've chosen a socialistic path. If this is what we want to say about public entities, let's say it as a finding. If we differ, let's find words to describe it.
Suppose now I endorse completely what Dr. Kornhoff is saying, because it makes sense. If the state-owned enterprises don't have any money, from Treasury, and then they carry on, they're not collapsing, then it means the sun is right, they're self-sustaining. Because it is either they receive an allocation from government, or if they don't, then it means they collapse. But they're not collapsing, they're sustainable. They're self-sustaining, because there is no sponsorship from the corporate world from anywhere. I mean, so logic says, if you don't get money from government, not from the private sector, how do you live? something must sustain you, and it must be yourself. So it's self-sustainable. So I think, besides, the Commerce Secretary is right. If you can just read that formulation, then you just dispense with all the emotions. You just reread that portion.
Can I read it? It was reported that public entities do not receive capital from government. Most entities are self-sustainable, and the proceeds are used to fund government's developmental agenda.
Very, very sad.
Can we just say that profits and proceeds, not to say self-sustainable, that we say profits and proceeds are used to fund government developmental agenda? I would be comfortable with that.
Mr.
Well, if they make profits, and if they are profits, and we don't...
Mr. Van Dalen, there's no conflict. There are two concepts here. There's a question of sustainability using the one thing. The other one is you take your profits to fund the machine. It's not two separate things. They're not conflictual. Why do you think it must be conflictual? Let's take it.
I just don't want to state as a fact that public entities are self-sustainable. I mean, we can't prove it. So we can't state it as a fact, but we can say that profits and proceeds... Yeah, but we never investigated it. Why are we reporting on it if we never investigated that part
just
of it?
Just a sec, Honorable September. Come with your phrasing.
Yeah, what I say is public entities do not receive capital from government, or it's reported that they don't receive it. I'm fine with it. And then profits and proceeds are used to fund government developmental agendas. That's fine. I'm happy with that. But to state that entities are self-sustainable, I don't think we can do that. I'm not comfortable with that.
So they may be not self-sustainable and still make profits.
So some of them might be self-sustainable. I agree with that. But they say most. And I don't agree with that.
So your problem is on the word most.
On the word most and sustainable. So if some are sustainable and the profits and proceeds are distributed to fund government developmental agenda, I will be happy with that. But not with most.
Let's say some entities. Because some doesn't mean less as well. So some. Yeah. Okay, let's put the some.
Maybe some.
Some. Okay. Let's proceed then.
Maybe some other.
Venezuela, we highlight that the Venezuelan telecommunications company is working with China on a satellite project that has a social impact in improving the health conditions of the people of Venezuela. The entity ensured that the poor had access to advanced facilities such as the CT scanners, telemedicine, and etc. The entity also has the Canai project. Okay. The Canai project, a partnership with Portugal to provide primary school children up to grade 6 with portable computers. These computers are assembled in the country and the process includes the training of staff. The objective is to ultimately ensure that these computers are not only assembled in Venezuela, but are also manufactured in the country. The company has connected 65% of the population with fixed telephone lines, and 69% of the Venezuelans have access to mobile phones. To improve the quality of its services, the company has installed about 6,600 kilometers of optic fiber cable, and about 4,500 homes were benefited from this initiative. That was Ken TV, the telecommunication company. The 7.2.2 is Confianza, the airline company. The airline provides services to meet the health needs of Venezuelans. It carries all patients booked for eye testing per specialist. There were 500 eye inspections per year before the Confianza's assistance, and most Venezuelans with eye problems died being blind. With Confianza's help, about 5,000 eye tests are carried out per week. The airline also forms part of Venezuela's international humanitarian mission. It transported 20 tons of food to Japan to help the victims of the earthquake, including taking back home Latin Americans who were trapped in the country. Aeropostal is also an airline. The airline provides services to the poor and to rural communities through charging low fares for traveling. It is accessible to people who previously could not afford to fly. The agriculture, Agropatria, works with small and medium-sized producers. It has about 304 to 461 hectares of land. About 304 to 461 hectares of land is allocated to small-sized producers, and about 159 to 287 hectares to medium-sized producers. Both producers are subsidized by the state and have access to loans from state banks. Minivan, which is the mining company, mining companies are required by law to give 5% of their profits to communal councils, the communal council of the immediate community. In addition, the company should partner with the community and other stakeholders for the construction of multi-purpose community centers, schools, clinics, recreational parks, etc. COPO elect the electricity company. Once the process is completed, the party envisages a socialistic management model of the electricity corporation, which will include the workers of the corporation, communal councils, as well as management members of the corporation. The process is, however, long and challenging and has its ups and downs, as it involves a paradigm shift from capitalism to socialism. Such challenges are palpable even at the level of senior managers who work for the previous government. Those who are unhappy with the new socialistic model have resigned. Some have, however, shown a willingness to work with the current regime. There are also those who are in the middle, referred to by the current regime as neither nor, or who on persuasion are prepared to work for the state. Public banking sector. Public banks are profitable and provide social investment and services to the various communities. The public banks visit communities to investigate the needs of the people, unlike the private banks. They reach the most needy sections of the population and provide loans with a very low interest rate. The banks also provide the following services: produce funds for the social services of government, promote easy access to financing for small businesses, women and social projects, encourage the cultures of social responsibility, fund strategic entities such as food producers and housing projects. 7.2.8 Profoca Forestry Company. The company employs about 18,000 workers and provides internship programs for both undergraduate and postgraduate students. Government has initiatives that promote job creation and cooperatives in the following areas. Here we've got three areas where we highlight how many cooperatives each area has, and also how many people they employ in the cooperatives. 7.2.9 Rail Institute. To address the needs of the people, the department is working with.
Is there any need to read this further? I mean, now that the controversial Venezuelan part is done, do we really have to read any further? I mean, the journalist has got the document, he will write and contribute tonight. Do we really have to, I want to plead that, let's just be honest here, the controversial section is over. Do we really want to still read all of this?
Mr. Chairperson, I take exception. I mean, what Honorable September is now saying is that we are only performing for the media, and that is rubbish. I mean, if I feel that I have a valid point, don't patronize me, please, Mr. Chairperson. I ask your protection in this.
For the record, I did not say anything to Honorable Van Dalen.
Honorable Van Dalen, Honorable September is making a proposal, and I think if you have any counter idea to this, whether we accept what she's saying or we contribute to anybody having done anything except anything.
Well, she did say the media is gone now. Now we can just fly over the report. The controversial parts are gone. We have a job to do. I mean, if she doesn't take it serious, I do take my job serious. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah,
my proposal remains, despite the heatedness and the howling, my proposal remains.
My feeling is that, I've read through the report, so I know what comments I want to make, so I can't give those comments in now if you
if you choose that. We don't have to go line by line.
No need to go.
We don't necessarily need to read it line by line, but I mean, I do have other comments to make on this report, even though these things might not be controversial. Some of them are. I mean, we haven't. Should I make my comments then?
Yes.
Okay, because I also have to go to another meeting now as well. Okay, so, well, let's go to the recommendations, because I think that, you know, there's controversy in that.
That's
where
we want
to. I think that, I mean, what would be controversial for me in the recommendations would be particularly 10.6, the DPE learned from the experiences in Venezuela, where SOEs are guided by the values of humanism, focused on delivering affordable services to the people, bringing relief to the people in need, and are sustainable. That's 10.6. That's on the last page, page 20. I mean, I would contest that particular recommendation. I'm not sure that that's 10.6. Yeah, that one over there, over the page. And then also the 10.8, the DPE consider developing mechanisms to encourage SOEs to promote and support cooperatives. I'm not sure if that's necessarily a recommendation that I would support as such. I mean, I don't know if that's the way forward for SOEs in South Africa. And I'm not sure that that was a glaring, that was something that came out of our study to where we all thought this is something we have to really push. I don't think that necessarily is a recommendation. Then, when the committee acknowledged that the economic systems practice in Venezuela and Brazil work for those countries, I'm not sure, you know, whether those systems work for those countries can be contested. I mean, if anything, what I would argue is that Brazil has had enormous success in a number of key indicators, whereas, to be as uncontroversial as possible, I think Venezuela has had a mixed result in terms of some key indicators. But I don't know if you want to put it in there. I'm just not sure if we should even put in the fact that these economic systems have worked for both countries. I don't think they necessarily have, so I don't know if we need to put that in there.
Okay, can we have on the two issues, Annette, members, can you members want to raise issue with the other point? Can we have comment on the one that is 10.6, 10.8, and the first sentence on conclusion. Honorable Quayling, your suggestion is that we remove this from
this? Yes, I will take it.
On 10.6, Chair, I think if we recall going through the annual reports of entities, it's that they are doing it already. So it's a recommendation that is not out of sync with what entities in South Africa are doing already. So I'm not sure if we take this out that it will change the minds of the entities that are doing it already. So I think it's probably what harm is there to leave that in there when they are doing it already?
I don't have a problem to leave out 10.8. I can't remember, unless there's a compelling reason why we want to put it in here, because it must come from the body. So if I put up in the body the cooperatives and we want to make a recommendation here, I'm fully prepared to accept that. But loose standing, I can't recall that. Yeah, so I would not be hesitant to agree to 10.8 to be left out or rephrased. On 10.6, I think it is contained in the main body. Again, it is what our observations or findings were of the experiences in Venezuela with regard to the state-owned entities. And And I think we can change the wording around if Mr. Phelan wants to make suggestions. But I would be hesitant to leave 10.6 out completely. The economic system's under conclusion. I think we must start where we end here, where we started. In the beginning of the committee secretary stated clearly what the economic systems are, and I think we must, again, what you said, we respect the various paths or systems that they've put their foot on. It's not for us to judge that. We can just observe it here.
When you look at the conclusion, where the committee acknowledged, that these systems work for those countries, the committee does not acknowledge that, doesn't say that this system is successful or whatever, doesn't say whether or not the system is right.
Look, a recommendation is even stronger than a finding. I mean, a recommendation really is our own thoughts, and it has to be something that we get agreement on. And you know, unfortunately, when we say the DPE learned from the experiences in Venezuela, where the SOEs are guided by the values of humanism, focused on delivering affordable services to the people, bring relief to the people in need, and are sustainable, that reads to me, particularly in a recommendation sector, that we believe that this is all true, and that therefore we need to learn from Venezuela as to how to do this. And I'm saying that I don't think we can conclusively, after a week's tour of Venezuela and seeing the contrast in reports, come and make a statement like this, that we have so much to learn from Venezuela's SOEs in these particular areas. I don't think that is necessarily the case. And I just say I would be more comfortable leaving that out, because I don't think that is necessarily a statement of fact. I'm happy for it to be in the other body of the text and to say this is what's been reported and all of that. I don't know if we can come conclusively and say we've got a lot to learn from Venezuela in the way it's easy or run in terms of these issues. That's that would be my thought.
So I think I will second what Honorable Gordon offered.
Yes,
to the economic systems by the state-owned entities. If I remember correctly, I haven't traced my notes as yet, but the entities in the Venezuela has... I'm on 11 before I get to 10.8. On 11, instead of talking economic systems, rather let us conclude on state-owned entities.
Mm.
Because we didn't study
not
economic
not
systems. This was not the mandate. The mandate was to study state-owned entities. So let's conclude on state-owned entities. And then, if I remember correctly, in Brazil, when we discussed with PwC, they sort of compromised to say this is a mixed economic system, where they found the best mix between privatization and nationalization. So it's a mixed economy that works for them. So I think in the conclusion we can reflect that. Whereas in Venezuela, they said right from the start, since 1999, it's a socialist state, it's a social vision of state-owned entities, and that's what they're implementing. That's the government policy. Yeah. So I think we should combine the two in one sentence. It would be difficult to find the wording, but rather let's go that way. On the 10.6, it seems it says that the DPE is to learn from the experience in Venezuela, where state owners are guided by the values of focused
on affordable service to people, bring relief to the people. I don't think it should, if Mr. Greiling's observation is, this is a go-ahead to say this is a model to strive for.
Mm.
That's not my impression. That's not what I read in here. I read in here, there are certain experiences in state-owned entities in Venezuela that is working for them on human capital and on service delivery to the people that we can see, but what value is there in the value of? Not to say there is value, go and learn. That's not my understanding. My understanding is we say we observed some of the things of working in Venezuela. Can we learn from that experience? That's what I understand without going into the detailed wording. But we need to understand the concept before we find the wording.
But if that is the wording that Honorable Kurtenhoff is supposed to tell, then I would agree with it. That the last sentence you said, that we observed, and there are things that we have observed that are working, and that we have to go learn about it, and I'm happy with that.
Okay. I think that brings us. That's too neither on it. I think this then. Can I say something?
Just before you do,
yeah.
Maybe what we should do also is without discarding the one and not looking at the other one.
Yeah.
We can't say there are things that are not working in Venezuela. I mean, it's not true.
No, we're not saying.
That's what it.
We're
but
not saying
at the, I'm talking to the chair.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what is the art gallery doing now. But what I'm saying is, I can remember there are certainly certain instances that we don't want to learn. We don't want to learn from the corrupt practices that we see in some instances, and I think we must find wording to accommodate that sentence also, because I think that's
Yeah, so there are success stories.
Sure, I mean, for instance, I mean, I agree, there are possibly some areas where I think SOEs possibly have gone beyond their mandate and have done well, and possibly we could learn from that in Venezuela. But for me also, for instance, the fact that the nationalization policy is not guided by any kind of policy that it seems to be at the discretion of the president, it's created a huge amount of uncertainty, there's a whole bunch of issues around that. So I also think that that's a lesson for us, that you can't have it operate in that way. SOEs can't operate in that kind of an approach. So for me, there's certain lessons that you can take from Venezuela as what not to do, as well as possibly some things as to what to do. And the point is, if we're just going to put in the good stuff, then should we put in the bad stuff as well? Or what is our recommendation coming from there?
Like I to do, and I know we, the way. Are we done with your comments?
One other thing, Chair, and I won't be controversial here, but I just think in Brazil, perhaps what we can say is that we should also look at their remuneration of CEOs and of executives of SOEs there. That when we draft in our policy, that we should possibly look at what Brazil's done, because their system seems to work quite well there. I would put that down as a possible recommendation.
Honorable.
And on Brazil, thank you for reminding us. I remember vividly the water company that we visited. It's certainly not something that we can learn from. And somehow that needs to be reflected. I mean, it's a company that... they told us all the difficulties, let's just be honest here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that how they are managing their water entity somewhere in here, it should be reflected that it is probably not the right route for us to go, because yeah, we agree that water is an important commodity, and the Brazilians are struggling with the decision that they have taken in that regard. So I think the negative side of Brazil must be put in here also.
Any further, Honorable Kurama?
I think that on Brazil, the factor that I think is important, if we haven't captured it, is that the critical success factors that they've introduced in these state-owned entities. And then they talked, you remember, the first wave factors, but also the second wave factors. And they had three second wave factors. That's corporate governance, competitiveness, and good legislation. I think that is also that issue that we can learn from if we want to put the positive from this.
Any further comments?
Honourable members, Honourable Lance, please sit down just right. For a minute. I want to thank you for, the way we dealt with this report. I think we didn't really have the fight we were expecting. I thought we were going to. I thought there would be blood on the carpet. Is there a carpet? I thought there would be blood on the carpet. But I think one thing that we really must agree on is that we didn't go to Venezuela and Brazil to learn about socialism or nationalization. It never was. Part of what we've agreed on, what we've decided we're going to do in both these countries. Yeah. And it's unfortunate that this thing keeps on coming up, that it seems we were, going to learn whether or not there are some journalists who even think that we were sent by Malema to go and study nationalization in Venezuela. And I think that was a bit very mischievous, because that's not why we went there. We had a very good visit to both countries, and I think we and it has been demonstrated here in this meeting, we agree with most of the things that we saw there. Or that we heard, that we learned. Yeah, well, we traveled business class. That's a fact. And I just wanted to say thanks that we now agreed on this report, and it's now off our table. And thank you, our members. Oh, yeah. Honorable September, you asked to be earlier. After Dr. Kuranov, I think the meeting will then be adjourned.
Just a brief point.
Yeah.
This report is called now draft report.
Yeah.
A journalist got the report and he left with a draft report, which is not the final report.
Yes.
So I suggest that the secretary and the researcher make all the adjustments and improvements and then call it the final report or report. And then that's the only report we can defend.
Yeah.
We're not going to be looking at the draft report again. It's now final report on the way forward. And secondly, I just want to make sure now it's now the report of the committee.
Yeah.
Like when we departed in Venezuela and Brazil,
yes.
We agreed on how we're going to handle it, and we did it.
Yeah. Now it is.
And now it's a committee report, and I just need your guidance on how do we. Everybody can comment on it, report, it's fine, it's political party. But at the end of the day, it's a collective property of the committee, agreed by everybody. And I just need your guidance how we're going to handle it from now on in the future.
You can't stop political parties or individuals who represent political parties to comment on the report that we have agreed on with amendments that we've made on this report. So I think what we agreed on in Brazil has been lifted now. I can't say we We have a report now. We've made corrections to the draft. We have amended it. And that's it. Honorable September.
Okay, now that it's the committee's report, I think it will be right from your side to say something. I think it will only be correct for you to put together something and release that to the media so that we don't have some confusion going on.
Okay. So shall we just formally? No. Let us just have a formal adoption of this report with the amendments.
Chairperson.
Any second? Any second? That the report is adopted with this amendment. Agreed.
Unanimous agreement.
I agree.
If there's no hands up, it means it's unanimous.